last case of our morning's call is number 04-4195, Bujja against the Attorney General.
Members of the panel, good morning. I'm Christopher Helt, and I'm representing Mr. Karyani Hidayat in this petition for review challenging the Board of Immigration Appeals decision of January 19, 2005. Mr. Hidayat entered the U.S. on a valid visa from the Philippines in 1999. He has no criminal record, and his visa eventually ran out. He continued to remain in the U.S., however. On December 21, 2000, President Clinton signed the LIFE Act, which affected people like Mr. Hidayat. Five major changes in immigration law took place. This court has already recently dealt with the job-based green card applications in the Subhan versus Ashcroft decision. This situation, however, involved a green card petition by my client's brother, a United States citizen. He filed for a green card for his brother, and the INS, the legacy INS, eventually approved that petition. However, family-based green cards, like the job-based green cards, take time. Since the petitioner is not married to his brother, obviously, he is not an immediate relative, and just like the job-based categories, he has to wait. Even though his I-130 has already been approved, he has to wait. I checked with the website last night, and the processing time for these types of green cards, the State Department is currently working on them as of March 15, 1994. That figure, that date has moved quite a bit since the first time this case was back in the immigration court system.
But the problem, I think, Mr. Hilt, a couple of problems with this case. One of them is that neither the law nor the regulations nor any decision that I know of require a stay during the period of time while those visas become available. As this case illustrates, it could be a rather long period of time, even 4 or 5 years should be a long period of time. And then really intersects with the fact that Mr. Hidayat was given the privilege of voluntary departure, and through whatever set of snafus occurred, I mean, the bottom line is he never got a stay of that date. And there are a lot of things that are harsh about the immigration laws, including this, but he didn't get a stay. And so how can he be eligible at this point?
Well, we would ask the court to look at two issues that the BIA addressed in that January 19, 2005 order addressing this court's question. The first one would be whether Subhan could be applied to Mr. Hidayat's situation. As I believe Judge Posner noted, the wheels of bureaucracy turn slowly.
Well, they do, but the facts in that case involved something much more imminent, and actually that this court's ruling, as it frequently is with the BIA, was simply to say you people have to make decisions that are transparent. They've got to have reasons for relying on various rules of law. It wasn't a merits ruling that people always get extensions of time.
It's
very carefully not a merits ruling.
I agree. It's the basis of the BIA's decision, the rationale that we challenge here. They state and they argue that the BIA and the immigration judge applied a standard which we submit is clearly in error. In fact, I believe since this case has been filed, the other courts of appeal have overturned the decision that is cited and relied upon in that January 19, 2005 decision. They cite that the petitioner, my client, is barred because of matter of Shar. Recently, and I will file a 28J letter, Azarte versus Ashcroft, and the site is 394 Fed 3rd 1278. It's a 2005 decision out of the Ninth Circuit. They reject that analysis. And just like in this situation, the petitioner filed a motion to reopen prior to the time of the voluntary departure period elapsing. And the court, the Azarte court, says in that situation, matter of Shar does not apply. And the reason why it doesn't apply, because the 1996 law, it changed things. with the passage of the 1986 law, IRA-IRA, motions to reopen, as in this case, were transformed into from a regulatory to a statutory form of relief. And that's the Azarte decision, page, I'm quoting it, 1283. So the BIA in this situation, they found that, quote unquote, he was statutorily ineligible under 8 U.S.C. section 1229 C.D. This is the situation here. Mr. Hidayat filed a motion to reopen timely prior to the expiration of his voluntary departure period expiring with the immigration judge. The immigration judge has no jurisdiction to entertain requests for extensions of voluntary departure periods. That can only be made with the district director, which he did. In Exhibit H of the motion to reopen, we see that we have made a formal request to the district director and attached that to the motion to reopen, the very first motion to reopen with the immigration judge, demonstrating the catch-22 that the court has just touched upon, in which the respondent argued why his case should be opened. He attached an affidavit retracting his plea of voluntary departure and argued the case law. Now, the argument that we positioned at that time, we argue, has now been memorialized by other courts of appeal, and we would request that this court either discuss the Azarte decision and distinguish it, because it does deal directly with this case and this issue, wherein the passage of the 1996 law rejecting where motions to reopen were transformed from a regulatory to a statutory form of relief make matter of Shar no longer applicable. It does not apply to this case. And if I have no other questions, I'll reserve my time on rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Mr. Potter.
May it please the court, Jonathan Potter on behalf of the Attorney General. The board denied the discretion in denying Mr. Hidayat's motion to reconsider the board's denial of its motion to reopen. First, Mr. Hidayat did not have an immediately available visa, and he was not statutorily eligible for adjustment because of that.
Could I ask you a question? If Mr. Hidayat had, in fact, voluntarily departed, it seems to me that that very action would have destroyed his eligibility for the 245-1 adjustment of status, because one of the criteria under 245 is that you're continuously in the United States. So as soon as he voluntarily departs, he's not in the United States, and the whole thing moots. It's not it's a, it really does strike me as basically a catch-22, because I know that the law is trying to change in a way that the voluntary departure allows the processing to go on, and the person can come back to the United States if and when, you know, the correct visas become available and so on. We want the system to work in a reasonable way. But this particular one doesn't look to me like it could work that way.
Yeah, that's not raised in the brief.
Yeah, but I'm asking you this question because I don't understand how this system works and what exactly is the Attorney General's position. Sort of, it's almost fraud, practically. Here, you give you this 245 eligibility, but then you have to voluntarily depart, and now you're not eligible. Yeah, and if you're a Kafka fan, then you really
this is a little bit Kafka-esque in the way it looks. But what would happen in this case, in the ordinary circumstances, he would depart, and I think probably his date would be around 2008, 2009. That's just when he would again be allowed to come back into the country and adjust his status.
But how could he, why would the petition still be alive if the criterion is continuous presence in the United States? When he's not, he's back in Indonesia, you know, so he's obviously not in the United States. I'm just trying to figure out how these intersect with one another.
They intersect in that the Attorney General has taken the position in other cases that if you voluntarily depart and you still have that date out in the future where you can come back in and you can adjust status.
So is the Attorney General saying, one of two things the Attorney General might be doing, one of them is to say that the continuous presence requirement of 245 is satisfied if you were continuously present at the time the adjustment of status petition is filed, or the Attorney General might be saying that somehow he has the power to waive continuous presence in the United States for people who voluntarily departed. I don't know which it is.
Excuse me, Your Honor. It's the latter. It's in his discretion. He has discretionary authority to allow people to come back in if they voluntarily departed and come back in. And it's basically the contract has been met. You voluntarily depart, you come back in, we will allow you to adjust status at that time.
Is that written down anywhere in any regulation or any statement of the Attorney General?
Yeah.
It would be a pretty thin reed of hope if the Attorney General could kind of capriciously change his mind in the case of any person.
Your Honor, if that were the case, I would have been prepared to address that as where it's written down. I just know that is the way things are done.
Just in fairness, the reason I think that it was actually raised is on page 11 of your brief, actually the bottom of page 10 and the bottom of page 11, you have a long footnote 3, in which you're talking about voluntary departure as an alternative to removal. You're talking about the pluses and minuses, and it facilitates the possibility of return to the United States by adjustment of status, etc. That raised very much in my mind these questions that I'm asking, because you imply to me in that footnote that had Mr. Hidayat left, he could have come back when his visa, when the dates catch up with him, just long backlog.
Your Honor, I would be very happy to 28J where that is. And where that policy is memorialized. I just don't have that handy right
now. I would appreciate seeing that.
I would be better. Surely, Your Honor. Also, in this case, the board found appropriately that by statute, Mr. Hidayat now is precluded from applying for adjustment of status because he failed in his contractual duties to voluntarily depart, as he promised to do. And therefore, the board was correct in denying his motion to reopen. Although it did come up in petitioner's case, briefly address the NCR's argument, it's no way a violation of due process. First, there was no due process. There's no liberty interest at stake for Mr. Hidayat in this case, so therefore it doesn't implicate due process.
Well, I mean, the only thing about the NCR's argument that strikes me is that in the couple of instances where people tried to go in advance and attack this as a constitutionally offensive system, then at least it was all in advance. I understand, particularly in light of other cases, once a person has come to the attention of the Department of Homeland Security, it's a little weird to say, you know, you get to stay in the country even though you're illegal, because we had another illegal program, you know, to find you. I mean, that doesn't really add up according to a lot of law that I know. But the NCERS program certainly was problematic.
Yeah.
And the Attorney General must have thought so because he dropped it.
That's right, he did. And it may have been problematic in the Attorney General's opinion, in this court's opinion, but still, I mean, Mr. Hidayat was in violation of law and being here illegally, and so therefore he can't now claim that somehow the Attorney General or the Department of Homeland Security should not be seeking to remove him.
Well, what you're saying, I think, is that the relief he's asking for, there's no real remedy to whatever illegality there may have been that he, in particular, could logically get.
That's correct, Your Honor. To sum up, we ask that this court affirm the decision of the board in denying the motion to reconsider the motion to reopen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Potter. Mr. Held, you had some extra time, 4 minutes.
The petitioner's answer to his argument is stated in our briefs, and we will rest on the briefs as stated. However, in the meantime, we have 9/11, with this discussion of why we had answers and whether it was right or wrong. We have 9/11, and we have a climate that's dramatically changed with regard to immigration. The Attorney General institutes special registration, where individuals from predominantly Muslim countries have to report to the INS to be voluntarily fingerprinted, photographed, However, that really doesn't happen, and they aren't just fingerprinted, photographed, and released. As in Mr. Hidayat's case, he was detained and placed in removal proceedings, and that's where the chronology of events begins.
There's about 1 in 4 people, right?
Who were put in removal proceedings? 86,000 have been removed since the last time I checked. I'm not sure on the exact figures, but many, many people, and there were many thousands of individuals who had pending green card applications, pending labor benefits, just as this court addressed in the Subhan case. We feel that this case is even stronger than Subhan because Subhan involved a labor-based, arguably a more tenuous relationship, whereas this case involved a family-based relationship where the visa has been approved, not where a labor certification may or may not be in the incubative stages and a judge denies a continuance and saying that's quote-unquote speculative. This is a situation where the government has already approved the visa petition. It's based on a family member, his brother, and simply the wheels of bureaucracy are turning slowly. There are no visas available, and this individual must wait until a priority date becomes current.
Which is why I was asking, I am simply not aware of anything in the law that lets people wait here in the United States if particularly they have already agreed to voluntary departure, which is why I'm so concerned to know whether departure moots the whole thing or whether there is some possibility of the process playing out in the end in an appropriate way.
Yes, Judge, it is possible that the plea of voluntary departure may moot that, but in this situation, the respondent, with his own affidavit and his motion, prior to the period expiring, attempted to reopen and withdraw that, and the judge denied it based on matter of shari, said he was barred because even though he had filed it prior to the period expiring, now since the judge has made a decision after the period expiring, he lost out on it. And the Azarte court says that's not fair. If you file a motion to reopen and it's prior to the VD period expiring, an alien can't be blamed for the court system to make a decision after that period has lapsed. And we, again, would wish that this court would address the decision made by the BIA on January 19th, which we filed a timely petition for review, arguing that that is bad law, that the BIA not only misapplied matter of Shah, but it has since been overturned, and it's illogical. There's no basis in the law, and with IRA, the motions to reopen have transformed that from a regulatory to a statutory right, and this alien had an absolute right, this petitioner had an absolute right to file a motion to reopen, and the BIA erred in its determination as to why it should not reopen the case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, and our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken into account. We have finished the call of the morning, and therefore the call will rise until 9:30 tomorrow. Thank you.